across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet by webcast and by podcast. My name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. Good to hear from you. A lot of emails from people new to the show, and also continuing emails from people who've been listening for years but have just decided to get in touch now. Whichever category you fall into, it's really nice to hear from you. Thank you for keeping me going. If your email requires a response, then of course you will get one. And it's just nice to know that you are out there, you know, that you are listening, and that you are part of the family that is The Unexplained and has been for very nearly 15 years now. Thank you as ever to Adam, my webmaster, for keeping it all ticking over, and to Haley for booking the online show guests, including the one that we are about to speak with now. The guest on this edition of The Unexplained is somebody who is pretty well known. He's featured on many shows, certainly in the United States, and I think in this country too. We haven't had him on here before, so that is a gap we're about to fill. His name is L.A. Marzulli, described as an author, lecturer, filmmaker, written 8 books, including the Nephilim trilogy, which apparently made the CBA bestsellers list. He got an honorary doctorate for the series from his mentor, Dr. I.D.E. Thomas, who was the provost at Pacific International University. He's been involved in an awful lot of things that are very core to what we talk about here, including UFOs, and in particular, very ancient history and hidden history, I think is probably the best way to describe it. So L.A. Marzulli in the U.S. for the first time, the guest on this edition of the show. Hope you're going to enjoy that. Don't forget, if you want to contact me, you can do it through the website, theunexplained.tv. Follow the link and you can send me an email from there. And if you are able to, as you pass by, to make a donation for the ongoing upkeep of this show, it's an investment in the future. It will be very gratefully received. Remember that if you buy a cup of coffee, if you're able to do that in the territory that you live in at the moment under lockdown and all the rest of it, a cup of coffee is going to cost you, what, $2.50 in the US? £2.50 here in the UK for the most basic coffee. You may not even like it. You may love it. But the one thing is for sure, it'll take you 10 minutes to consume it, and when it's gone, it's gone. If you make a donation to The Unexplained, it is an investment for a long, long period, and will certainly entertain you for more than 10 minutes. So that's my reason, and I hope that you might feel able to do that. If you have recently, thank you very, very much from the bottom of my heart for doing that. Let's get to L.A. Marzulli now in the United States. And L.A. Marzulli, thank you very much for coming on my show.
Great to be here, Howard. Thanks for having me on.
Now, I have to say that I've heard you on other shows many times, and you and I have never spoken before in all of these years, and that's my fault for not reaching out. But I'm glad we're doing this now.
Absolutely.
Talk to me a little bit about yourself then. How would you define yourself?
I was on Jeff Jansen's show about 2 months ago in studio at Sid Ross Studios in Charlotte, North Carolina. And we did 4 shows together, 4 half-hour shows together. We were only supposed to do one. Then he said, oh, my gosh, that was great. Let's do another. And then we did a third. And he said, can you come back this afternoon and we'll do a fourth? So we did. And what he came up with this term, and I think it's kind of interesting, He called me a supernatural archaeologist. I'm not really an archaeologist. I'm not degreed that way. I hang out with a bunch of archaeologists, and I learned a lot. But I look at everything through a supernatural worldview, and there's a quote that I basically use that I state over and over again, that we are surrounded. There's a hidden history. There's a hidden history which has been deliberately obfuscated from the peoples of the world, and we're peeling it back like the layers of an onion in our Armor Trail of a Nephilim series. There's now 6 one-hour films which deal with everything from America Stonehenge, which is an unbelievable site, to the mound builders in the Ohio Valley and other places, to actually the DNA, number 6, the newest one, is the DNA evidence, the final results from the elongated, very enigmatic, elongated skulls found in Paracas, Peru.
Now, you said supernatural archaeology. Do you take the view, I kind of get the feeling that you do, that if the term supernatural, when it's applied to this, is simply archaeology that we don't yet fully understand. And that's what's supernatural about it. Is that so?
Well, that's really close. Let me just add to that, that let's say you go to a place, we'll just pick an easy one. I'm assuming a lot of people will know, Machu Picchu. And I've only been there one time, and I spent 2 days there running around the ruins. Obviously, you really can't, you know, in one day you can get an overview, but you or 2 days, but you certainly can't get the type of study that, you know, spending like month after month after month on the site and doing surveying and alignments and all that. But what I can say is this, that the megalithic stones that were put there defy logic. And when I lead a tour to these places, whether it's in the mounds in Ohio or America Stonehenge or over in Europe, like in places like Menga, Spain or Stonehenge, England, in your neck of the woods, I have people touch the material, touch the stones, and I look right at them and I say, what you are doing is touching the fingerprints of a supernatural, because they have no idea if they're really intellectually honest, and most of them aren't. They have no idea how they move the stones and set them. And that's why when you go to Machu Picchu or Sacsayhuaman, another site in Peru, and you see these large megalithic stones weighing numerous tons, 30, 40, 60, 80 tons, sometimes even greater. And there's no beast of burden in Peru when these sites were constructed. And there's precise, absolutely precise alignments to solar events, to equinoxes. And indigenous people just didn't have this stuff. They just didn't. And we're looking at something that defies logic. But when you go there and you get a guide, they immediately tell you that the Inca were master stone builders. If I were a millionaire, Howard, I would have them give them primitive tools like they used, and then say, okay, guys, you know, here it is. The quarry's a mile away. I would place the stones there for them and have them try to move these 30-ton stones with what they have available, which is manpower and llamas. It's not going to work. It's not going to fly, especially when the quarry in some of these places like Sacsayhuaman is 45 miles away and it's downhill. So we're looking at something else. I label it supernatural because the technology that's used, in my opinion, we don't have it today. It's not here in modernity with diamond saws and lasers and everything else and cranes. But none of that exists 4,000 years ago. So something very mysterious is going on here.
And we're coming to understand these things more every year, I think. And things that were regarded as fringe some years ago are becoming less so now. I didn't think we'd dive into it all so quickly, LA, and I'm delighted that we have, but you get straight to the point here, and I love it. But, you know, if I'm lucky enough to have spent a certain amount of time in South Africa, I've also been to Australia, but not nearly as many times. If you look at ancient civilizations, South Africa that Michael Tellinger, who's done an awful lot of work on, of course, is well experienced in, you look at Australia and the deep history there, and then you wind round to us here if we're doing a sort of arc, and you know, I'm sort of missing out Russia and Turkey and places like that, shouldn't really, but you go round to Egypt, and then you swing around again, and you're in the United Kingdom, where we have, of course, Stonehenge, which, you know, we were brought up on here, and then you swing across to the Americas. Do you think they're all connected?
Absolutely. Abso-stinking-lutely, in every way possible. And that's why my series is called On the Trail of the Nephilim. And this is what there's a term I came up with, fallen angel technology, Nephilim architecture. And everywhere you go, it's prevalent. It's there. It changes. It morphs a little bit. The mounds, like when you go to Salisbury Hill in your neck of the woods, and I haven't done anything with this footage, but I'm standing in front of this huge mound. And I look at the camera and go, where am I? Excuse me. Where am I? Am I in Ohio or somewhere else? Because there's no difference between that mound that we see on the Salisbury Plain and what we see, the mounds, let's say Miamisburg in Ohio. And seriously, if you took an archaeologist and you blindfolded him and you stuck him in front of that mound and he'd never been there, and you just kind of said, okay, here, under the blindfold, where are you? Where do you think you are? And he would look at that mound and he'd go, well, that looks like an Edina mound. That's what they call them over here. But we both know, Howard, that it's not. It's not an Edina mound. These are names that modern-day archaeologists give these sites because they have no idea who really built them. There's a guy over here called Cyrus Thomas about 120 years ago when all this information was being uncovered and people were looking at it and scratching their heads and wondering. And his answer was, well, Native Americans just built all these sites, but they just forgot that they had done so. How convenient is that? And when I'm lecturing at different places and conferences, and I bring that up, the audience just howls with laughter. I mean, what an absurd statement. The Native Americans built them, but they forgot that they had done so. I mean, Native Americans pride themselves in an oral history. And these story keepers are handed down generation to generation. They're selected at a very, very young age, and the stories are recited to them word by word, and they have to repeat them word by word. And obviously, these are children that have a proclivity to this sort of thing. And the reason why I know this is I've talked to Indigenous First Nation people like Chief Joseph Riverwind and others who have told me this is exactly the way they did this. And Chief Joseph comes in on three of our films anyway, and basically states that, I'll just give you an example. When you go to the Serpent Mound in Ohio, and I've been there three times, bizarre area, and it's this undulating serpent that goes for hundreds of yards across the Ohio landscape. But you can really only see it when you're in the air, which is why they built a two to three story tower, and you get up on top of it, and you get kind of an idea, wow, it's a serpent and it undulates. But when you fly a drone 300, 400, 800 feet in the air, wow, it really comes into perspective. And that begs the question, you know, why is it a serpent with its mouth open in the act of swallowing an egg? When you go there, there's signage that says the Shawnee, which is a tribe in the Americas here, built the Serpent Mound. But Chief Joseph, when I talked to him about it, he was absolutely incensed. He said, no, here's a article by Chief Wallace of the Shawnee, who states on the record the Shawnee did not build it. But the American archaeologist, oh, no, you built it. You just forgot that you had built it.
Gee, so I mean, but that kind paradigm. Of, sorry to jump in there, but to me, that sounds like a kind of arrogance on the part of so-called mainstream science, that they completely rode roughshod over the history of the native people who were there to tell you, we knew about people before us, you just didn't listen.
That's, you nailed it, right? You know, that's exactly what's going on. Another cogent example of that is the Octagon Mount, which is about 2 hours, something like that, from the Serpent Mount, also in Ohio. And it's the largest earthwork on the planet. And I've been there numerous times to the Circle Mound, the Octagon Mound. I've led tours there. I've lectured there. When you're in the Octagon Mound, you have no idea what you're looking at. None, absolutely none. You kind of go, well, I'm in something, but you're not sure what the enclosure is. It encompasses 50 acres. It's either 50 acres or 52 acres. I think it's 50 acres. 50 acres of land, and it's an irregular octagon. It's not a, you know, an equal eight sides that are equal. Two of the sides are unequal. So now we've got a real complex deal, and the alignments that are in the Octagon Mound, the precision is mind-boggling. And they have no idea who built it. They say, oh, this is the Hopewell culture. Again, Hopewell was a farmer. They're just making this stuff up. And there's an arrogance because it shows something is going on. There's a hidden history, going back to the very first quote. There's a hidden history which has been deliberately obfuscated. And we deconstruct this. American archaeologists tell us that they built these things with digging sticks and clamshells and stone hoes, stone tools. Well, we deconstructed that, and we show it in the film, Mathematical Mysteries of the Mound Builders. When you take another site called Fort Ancient, once again in Ohio, and this is 3.5 miles of continuous earthen walls. It's not a fort. It also had 66 gates, solar alignments, knowledge of the equinoxes, the whole deal. We were there on the spring equinox, and my wife's got a cell phone with a star chart on it. And we were standing in front of the gate, which is still intact. It's two mounds. This was the main entrance to the site. Guess what? Guess what constellation shows up on the spring equinox? Mm-hmm. It's a serpent. It's Hydra, the serpent. Right dead center of the gate. Now, that's deliberate. That's not a coinkadink. So here's the deal. They try to going back, circling back to the stone tools, the digging sticks. And we show this guy, Docent Jack, and he's lecturing people, and he's saying that Native Americans built this with stone digging tools, digging sticks. And he says something which is mind-boggling. He goes, if you were to deconstruct the 3.5 miles of earthen walls, and you were to fill them up fill up dump trucks with the dirt from the 3.5 miles of continuous earthen walls, and you back them end to end to end to end. So now you've got 5 dump trucks, 10 dump trucks, 20 dump trucks, 50 dump trucks, 200 dump trucks. Get this, and I'm not making this up. It's 200 miles of dump trucks end to end filled with dirt. Howard, we're supposed to believe that this was done with these primitive digging sticks, and we show what a stone hoe can actually do. You know, we actually found a flint napper. I mean, this is science. We're not making stuff up. Found a flint napper, made a replica of a hoe that was used 4,000 years ago, found a fit laborer, took him out to a site with the same type of dirt, filmed him digging this thing. Are you kidding? When I show this to people, audiences, again, the laughter is just absurd. People just start cracking up because they realize 200 miles of dump trucks. And so what archaeologists do, they go, oh, it took 1,000 years for them to build that. But they don't know that. They're just guessing. So, again, there's a hidden history which has been deliberately obfuscated. There's something else going on the planet. And we have been visited because these cultures, Howard, they disappear. You know that, and I know that. They just disappear. They, you know, a perfect example is Göbekli Tepe. It's like, okay, well, where did that come from? Why is it all buried? Then you skip over to the Hypogeum on the island of Malta. Well, that was only discovered a few decades ago. It was hidden. It was covered over, and they found, depending on who you read, 7,000 human skeletons piled up in this one room. It was not a funerary. It was not, something else was going on there. And then you get elongated skulls and legends of the giants. But the bottom line is that civilization, just like Göbekli Tepe, just poof, gone. Just like Machu Picchu, gone. Sacsayhuaman, gone. The mound builders in Ohio, vanish. In your neck of the woods, they're still trying to sort out who really built Stonehenge. They're not sure. And our work on America Stonehenge, and I want to tell you this, because this will blow your mind, because it blew my mind. And Scotty Walter was the guy that actually did one of the first interviews on this, America Unearthed. And I saw the film, the TV program, and I immediately called the next day Dennis Stone at this site called America Stonehenge. And Dennis and I become fast friends. We spent several weeks there filming, which became America Stonehenge and the Axis Mundi Part 2. So we have 2 1-hour films on this. So here's the deal. This site is a 4,000-year-old site. It's got very, very enigmatic features to it. So when you stand in the center of that henge, America's Stonehenge, and you look out to the summer solstice standing stone, the sun comes right over that on the longest day of the year. And the Stone family, Dennis Stone was the guy that bought it. This is years ago, decades ago. They weren't sure what these standing stones were. And he was going, maybe it has something to do with the cycle. Sure enough, once they found that, they were off to the races. And they began to uncover other very large standing stones throughout the area that corresponded to the winter solstice, sunrise, sunset, the lunar sunrise, you know, lunar standstill, all this kind of stuff. And they were blown away by that. Enter the grandson, Kelsey Stone. He's a 23-year-old college student, and he has been on that site all his life. So he knows about it. And he's on Google Earth. Now, Dennis Stone, the grandfather, is deceased at this point, and he didn't know about Google Earth because it wasn't invented yet. So Kelsey Stone gets on and he goes, gee, I wonder if I draw a line on Google Earth from the center of my henge, center of my site, out to the summer solstice standing stone. I wonder where it goes. Maybe it goes over my house. That's his first thought. So he does the line, and wow, you know, the site goes pretty close to his house. So he's, you know, he's just kind of fooling around. And he extends the line to see where it goes. And the reason why he's doing this, because there was Phoenician writing found on the site. So he's wondering, I wonder if there's a connection, if I do this, back to the Phoenicians. So he starts drawing a line, and he's over Nova Scotia, out over the Atlantic. He goes through Ireland, and now he finds himself in southern England. And he thinks to himself, gee, I wonder if I'm close to Stonehenge, England. So he starts, you know, zooming in, and the line So there are two Trollathons at Stonehenge, England, uprights with a lintel across, and they're sort of, they're canted from each other. Howard, that line goes through the center of each lintel, each Trollathon, dead center. And that's not a coincidence. Absolutely not a coincidence. And we show that in the film. We talk about it in the film. And that means that somebody 4,000 years ago created this site and linked it back to Stonehenge, England. And then once they got that, they were off to the races. And we reveal what they discovered in our film, The Axis Mundi, The Center of the World. And it, I mean, I just sat there. You can see me in the film. At what point I just go, wow. I mean, I'm speechless.
So because do you believe
of what was discovered.
The Phoenicians, from their base, if you want to call it that, in the Mediterranean area, had a Correct. Kind of ancient internet going. You know, they were, it was some, you know, we all thought that all of these peoples, ancient peoples, had no connection whatsoever. How could they? They didn't have communications like we have, but you seem to suggest that they did.
They did. There's a grid system, and a lot of people know about the grid system. There is a grid system on the planet. And the fact that you can only do this, create a line like that by triangulation in the air, is mind-boggling. There's no way you can get a string long enough to go from America, Stonehenge, to Stonehenge, England. Not only that, but you're intersecting the two Trollathons dead center. But then this is why we call it the Axis Mundi. When you go out to other standing stones and you do exactly the same thing on Google Earth, you wind up, drumroll please, you wind up in Chaco Canyon. You wind up at Teotihuacan, the Pyramid of the Moon in Mexico. You wind up at Machu Picchu in Peru. You wind up at the Canary Islands. Off the coast of Spain. It's absolutely mind-boggling. And then, of course, you wind up, we've already talked about it, Stonehenge. That's why we call it the Axis Mundi. And what's bizarre about this is it makes one wonder when, you know, the center of the world, which is the first site? Why is there all this connectivity between these sites? And Dennis Stone just recently discovered that, I forget which standing stone it is, it goes back to the Great Pyramid in Egypt. And we're not making this stuff up. I mean, you can go check the work. You can rent the film by going to our shameless plug, but you can rent all six by going to streaming.lamarzulli.net, streaming.lamarzulli.net, instant gratification for under $25. I mean, that's a great deal.
Well, that's also the best bit of selling that I think I've ever heard in one of these podcasts over all these... All these 15 years of doing them. So do you think, LA, then, that there is, it sounds like you do, that there is a connection even with places like, there's a place in Scotland, Callanish, which is an array of standing stones.
Yes, I have not been there. It's on my bucket list. But with COVID, of course, it's just hampered everything.
Well, we can't do anything. Yes. But do you think they're all connected?
I think many of them are connected. I can't tell you one that we discovered. I'm not at liberty because we haven't released it yet, but there's a gentleman in France, and we spent like a week with this guy, and at one point, because I knew about the connectivity, and so we did something on Google Earth live with the cameras, and I haven't done anything with it yet, and I just sat there, I looked at this guy, and I just went, can you believe this? And he's looking at me, and he's completely blown away. And that's on another site in France. So, yeah, I mean, all these things are connected. And the only way you can do that is to get in the air. You have to triangulate it from the air. And, you know, you go back 3,000 years ago, obviously it was impossible. So we're looking at technology, which is not available 3,000, 4,000 years. We can do it now with the satellites. That's how we do everything with surveying. So you either go to one of two places, ancient aliens, and we were visited before by extraterrestrials, or are these entities, in fact, interdimensional beings? And I hold tenaciously to the latter. Let me just tell you one more story. We're at America Stonehenge, one of the first times, and I got this little Osmo camera, and I'm following Kelsey around the museum there, and Kelsey's pointing out the artifacts that were found and on the site, and it's we're having a great romp, and we get to this one display, and he goes, well, these are the stones that we found with writing on them. you know, okay, cool, whatever. I have no idea what I'm about to hear. And he goes, this is a stone that was found in a collapsed chamber under about a foot of dirt. And we knew it was writing, but no one could translate it. And it lay in the museum for 11 years until Dr. Barry Fell from Harvard University came in and said, that looks like Iberian Punic. I think I can translate it. So he makes a rubbing of it, an etching of it, photographed the whole thing. A couple of weeks later, he comes back and he goes, and this is the punchline. And Kelsey goes, and it was translated this way, to Baal of the Canaanites in dedication. And I left this in the film. There's this long pause, and I go, after about maybe 5 or 6 seconds, I can't believe what I'm hearing. And I go, what did you just say? And he kind of, Kelsey laughs a little nervously, and he goes, to Baal of the Canaanites in dedication. He had no idea. Now he's in my wheelhouse. And he doesn't know he's in my wheelhouse. And this is a direct connection to the Nephilim. Baal, B-A-A-L, is a Canaanite god. The Canaanites are the predecessors of the Phoenicians. This is where all this knowledge came from. The Canaanites are a Nephilim tribe. They're Nephilim. They're hybrid entities, which were all over the Middle East. And 3,500 years ago, when Joshua and Caleb pressed the conquest of the Promised Land, they fled. And when they fled, they took with them the knowledge. And this is why we see this explosion of the megalithic. And it explodes out of the Middle East, and then it goes to Crete, and then Malta, and then Gozo, and then Sardinia, and Majorca, and then up into Spain. This is where it all comes from, in my opinion.
Gozo is an amazing place. I was there some years ago, and I really did feel some kind of ancient pull about that little island. If you've never been there, just talking to my listener now, it's just off Malta, and you really have to go there. If I look, and I've just, as we were speaking, you were talking about America's Stonehenge. There is a little bit of introduction on its website, and it says, what is America's Stonehenge? And it says, built by a Native American culture or a migrant European population. Nobody knows for sure. That doesn't fit with what you're saying.
Well, that's Dennis Stone. Dennis is being politically correct. In other words, he's leaving it up to the somebody who doesn't know anything about this America Stonehenge, because that's a controversy. Was it built by Native Americans or is it Phoenician?
Right, and that term migrant European population is correct. Actually a kind of catch-all term.
It is, absolutely. Absolutely.
And we have I don't think we've said, the location of America's Stonehenge. People in the US will know, of course, but here in the UK, we just have to say it's in New Hampshire, yeah?
Salem, New Hampshire, and we're actually thinking about doing a conference somewhere near there, showing the films and then taking a tour of the site. Again, I've been there numerous times, and it's just, every time I'm there, I learn something different. Dennis is a walking encyclopedia. So it's Robert Stone, Dennis Stone, and Kelsey Stone. Dennis is now the curator, and Dennis is literally a walking encyclopedia when it comes to that place. And he gave us something. That's why we call the film The Axis Mundi, the center of the world. He was the one who showed us all the connectivity. We knew about America Stonehenge connection to Stonehenge, England, but we didn't know about the other sites. And he took us up in what we call the war room. When I say us, it was Fritz Zimmerman, who I think's been on your show before. And Fritz and I are looking at this information, and it was Fritz that said, this is the Axis Mundi, the center of the world. And so that's what we went. Fritz basically titled the episode without knowing he was titling the episode. So look, we don't have all the answers. Nobody does. I get that. But it's so enigmatic to me that the new film I'm working on is called Lost Civilizations. And we go to places like Norba, Italy, down in Peru, once again, Corral, the oldest city in the Americas. We're kind of all over the map. Gilgal-Raphaim, the Wheel of the Giants in Israel, to name a few places. The Tomb of the Giants in Malta. And so we show all this, and we've been there. I mean, we've been filming there. And so Lost Civilizations, because no one knows who built them. And yet we keep hearing over and over again, the Giants did it, the Giants did it, the Giants did it. Well, what if that's true? What if the Nephilim, because that's who the Giants were, mm-hmm. What if the Nephilim are responsible for doing this?
How does that fit with ancient Egypt?
Here's something to think about. If you go into the biblical narrative, the book of Genesis in particular, when you read Moses, and this is overlooked, it just amazes me. I actually wrote about it in the newest book, Shameless Plug, that just came out. It's called Countermove, How the Nephilim Returned After the Flood. When Moses and Aaron, according to the biblical record, they show up, most of us know the story. They show up in front of Pharaoh and, you know, okay, let the Israelites go. Pharaoh goes, no, not going to do it. We all know that, right? So Aaron's got this staff and they throw it down on the ground and the staff becomes a serpent. Well, that doesn't do anything to anybody. You know, Pharaoh just looks at his magicians and they basically repeat the exact same thing. What's overlooked and what people don't understand is 3,500 years ago when all this happens, they're about circa 3,500 years ago, a little bit before actually, there's a full-blown occult supernatural paradigm in the West anyway, which is the apex of civilization, Egypt. It's full-blown. It's there. Now, some people who are not supernaturalists like me, oh, well, that's just allegory. The staff really didn't become a serpent, and the magician really didn't do that. And that's, of course, where we might differ. They really did do that. That's the whole point. And the magicians are able to duplicate the first three signs, plagues, that Moses performs. And after that, they give up. And the fourth one, they go, okay, that's it. We're done. We can't do this. So something is going on there. And it's overlooked. I mean, if you've ever been in church, you'll never hear anybody talk about this. There's a full-blown Luciferian occult paradigm in operation. Everybody adheres to it. Nothing takes anybody by surprise. And then Moses comes in and changes the paradigm. That's what we're looking at here.
You've lost me slightly, only slightly.
Sorry.
How does this fit in with what we were talking about a moment ago? America's Stonehenge, our Stonehenge, Göbekli Tepe, South Africa, circles there that Michael Tellinger's been investigating.
Sure.
I don't know. Where's the connection?
Because if it's supernatural, if the supernatural events happen to Egypt, then we're looking at there's outside forces which are giving this information to mankind. When you go, take your pick, take Göbekli Tepe. All that just arises out of nowhere. There's no pre-existing culture. Hop over to Peru, Corral, the oldest city in the Americas. Step pyramids, knowledge of equinoxes, solstices. There is no pre-existing culture. It just arrives intact. Boom, here we are. We know how to do all this. Nobody's experimenting, Howard. Nobody's going like, let's build a pyramid. What's a pyramid? I don't know, but we're going to build one. I mean, poof, it just rises up. And I've been here like three or four times. It's a mind blower. Just a mind blower of a site. And it's all there intact. There it is. Ta-da! And the same thing with Göbekli Tepe. There's no pre-existing culture. Same thing with Sacsayhuaman. It's like, poof, there it is. Stonehenge, England. It's like, there it is. You mentioned the circle and Scotland, which is on our bucket list. So there's someone with advanced knowledge, building techniques, knowledge of solstices, equinoxes, planetary alignments. They know all this. And what's interesting is the very antiquated Book of Enoch, found in the Dead Sea Scrolls, talks about these entities. Call them what you want. Label it whatever you want. I don't care. But these entities are interdimensional. They come here and they, for instance, the equinoxes and knowledge of the moon and all the phases came from this entity known as Sariel. That's the guy who did it. So we see this, in my opinion, it happens over and over and over and over again, and it's global. And it's global.
How did they get, I mean, this is a real basic, probably a very dumb question. How did they get themselves around then? Did they have the ability to teleport, to think themselves into different locations?
Well, there are no dumb questions. That's actually a very brilliant question, because that's something we've been wrestling with. Because of the connectivity on these sites, and you remember, like, let's go circle back to Egypt. The Great Pyramid no longer looks or functions the way it used to. It is not a burial chamber. Khufu had nothing to do with it, in my opinion. Absolutely nothing to do with it. So was it some sort of an energy grid, as some people posit, possibly? Were these sites, by the connection with the Earth grid lines, were you able to teleport from one area to another? Very, very possible. Very possible. We don't know that. That's 100% speculation. But these sites no longer function the way they used to. Here's something to think about. When Hunbat's men and the Mayan elders came up in 2012 for the winter solstice, right, at the end of the Mayan calendar, they had the crystal skulls, and they went to, of all places, the Great Serpent Man, which we talked about earlier, in Ohio. Well, why are the Maya? What are the Maya doing there? How did Hunbat's men know about it? Why did he choose that site? And we show this in Secrets of the Supernatural, where Hunbat's men and the Mayan elders, they're opening up a gateway, Howard. There's no doubt in my mind. They are shaman. They know exactly what they're doing. They know who built it. They know who it honors, the serpent, who is the serpent. And they're there opening up that, or trying to open up that gateway, open up that portal. In the same film, we show this man by the name of Henry Gruber, who passed away a couple of years ago. So he was doing something. He would go out to these places, and he would basically shut them down and basically sort of counteract the human sacrifice and the bloodletting that was done on many of these sites. All right. So he's there alone. It's wintertime. It's snowing. And he goes out to the head of a serpent and does his thing on the head of a serpent, shutting down the gateway, shutting down the portal, and basically sort of, what's the word I'm trying to look for here? Basically asking forgiveness of the human sacrifice that was practiced on these sites. And as he's walking back to the car, an invisible force hits him in the solar plexus, and down he goes. And his knees curl up to his chest. He can't straighten them out. He can't move. He's like, he's paralyzed. That's supernatural. And he finally gets out of it after about 25 minutes. He prays against it. And finally, he's let loose. He gets a victory over the thing. But that's what we're looking at here.
So you think these, I'm sorry to dive in again, it's the old digital delay here, but you think that literally, I'm going to use a Star Wars term here, but this civilization had the Force, and the Force can still be invoked?
Yes. For those people who know who the Serpent is and are aligned with the Serpent, let me put it to you this way. We were out there at the spring equinox at the Great Serpent Mound, and that serpent, the mouth is open, and in front of it is a disc-like or an egg-shaped object. Well, serpents don't give birth with eggs through their mouth. They don't do that. What we are looking at hails back to a very ancient prophetic text, which says the seed, the offspring of the serpent, will be at war with the offspring of the woman. He, the offspring of the woman, will come and crush your head, take your kingdom from him. You, the serpent, will bruise his heel. Very ancient prophetic text. And so I wrote a paper saying a new paradigm for the Serpent Mound, because no one's ever written this before, because he didn't know that ancient prophetic text. And I said, no, the serpent is not about, the serpent denotes wisdom in occult circles, but, and the egg is not the birth of wisdom to mankind. That's not what we're looking at, in my opinion. It's exactly the opposite. The serpent is in the act of swallowing that egg, that offspring of the woman, so that the one who will come and crush his head will never show up. That's what that's about, in my opinion. Now, I'm stuck with that opinion, but that's what I firmly believe. That fits in. And once we do that, everything is like a set of dominoes. It just goes, oh my gosh, here it is. Once again, the serpent. And, you know, here we are. But when we're there, there's a group of a coven of witches. And they know exactly what that day is with the spring equinox. And they know exactly what kind of power is there. It's serpent energy. That's what attracted Hunbat's men. When we were in France, and we went to the standing stones there, the largest amount of standing stones on the planet. It's just absolute Karnak. It's unbelievable. And our guide, Howard Crowhurst, didn't know that I knew about Hunbat's men. So in passing, we're in this one area, and he goes, when I took Hunbat's men here, and I went, wait a minute. Hunbat's men was here? And he goes, yeah. And I go, well, what happened? And Howard goes, well, Hunbat's men, when we got close to this thing, he stopped. And he said, I feel serpent energy here. And I go, what do you mean by that, Howard? And he goes, there's a standing stone, one of the largest standing stones in Karnak, which has an engraving of a serpent on it. It's one of the few stones in Karnak that actually has something engraved. It's always the serpent. You go to Fort Ancient, which I mentioned earlier, and that gateway shows the serpent hydra. Boom, right there on the spring equinox.
How about it's Stonehenge over here?
I'd have to check into that.
Mm. But if there was that kind of symbology here, then that would suggest that we have something which you've been saying, international, a force or power that can be invoked. But that leads me to this. And here comes another dumb question, but you must have heard this one before. If they were so smart, boiling it down to its basics, where are they?
There's something that I've been toying with, a theory. And I've got Tim Alberino told me this. He was reading the entries in Spanish from the conquistadors in Peru. And one of the stories that was told to the conquistadors that the builders of Sacsayhuaman, these giants, all of a sudden the heavens opened up and this entity struck them all down.
So they were smitten.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have evidence of this in other areas. I mean, this is the theory that I have with this, Howard, and it's total conjecture on my part.
So you're saying that some greater force than even them allowed them to develop so far.
Correct.
And when they develop too far, struck them down.
Correct. And the reason why this fits is because they all disappear, Howard. Machu Picchu, they disappear. The mound builders in Ohio and all over the United States, they disappear. Chaco Canyon, they disappear. The Anasazi, they disappear. And archaeologists go, oh, well, there was a drought and these people no longer could sustain themselves, so they just left. So let me get something straight. You build this huge city in Corral, north of Lima, about 3 hours, with pyramids and equinoxes and standing stones and this whole thing. And there's a river that goes right next to it, literally. It's a verdant valley. It's unbelievable. It's beautiful. It's pristine. So let me get this straight. Everybody spends all this time building this thing, and then poof, we're just going to abandon it. I'm not buying it for a second. Something else happens. And we've got, the legend of the conquistadors talking about this entity that shows up and strikes these Nephilim giants down, smites them all. And we've got other stories, the same thing. Can I prove that? No, I can't. We also know that there were giants in the Americas. The Native Americans talk about 6-fingered, 9, 10, 12-foot giants that roamed the earth that were cannibalistic, which ties back into, once again, the enigmatic book found in the Dead Sea Scrolls, the Book of Enoch, which tells us that the Nephilim began to eat and drink the blood of human beings. And that's when everything goes south. That's when there's intervention.
By whom?
That's a $64,000 question. You'll have to ask me back before I answer that.
Okay, well, you've certainly teed that up well. I mean, this is kind of the L.A. Muzzoli primer. I think that's what this is. this is the nursery slopes, okay, before we do the full ski.
There you go, the full Monty, please.
All right, so in the search for further clues that ordinary people could understand, because look, when I was a kid, there was a Tutankhamun exhibition that came to London. And it was all, I never got down to see it. I was too young, but it was all over the TV. And I will never forget it. The treasures, the gold. Who were these people? When did they live and what was their life like? You know, we understand, we think we understand that. And the story of Howard Carter, who found the tomb. And of course, there are various stories about the curse that affected him, you know, in subsequent years. That's what we think we know. But what have we yet to discover? And how will you... Well, it's hard. I can't ask you what we've yet to discover because you haven't discovered it. That's a silly question. I'll give you that. But... where are you going to, I suppose, where are you going to start looking next?
Well, I have some things on the bucket list. I mean, obviously, Scotland would be one. There's also islands in the Mediterranean. We have not been yet to Crete, and I really want to get over to Crete. But once again, you know, it's COVID has just hampered everything. I want to get down to Australia and New Zealand and see what's over there. There's pyramids in China. Whether or not I could visit that or not, it's hard to tell. But there's enough stuff in the Mediterranean, and even in Spain and Portugal. I mean, we filmed all over Portugal. One very enigmatic place was called Zambujaro. And once again, we found alignments there, which just blew us away, just absolutely blew us away. So, you know, there's no end to it. I've only been to Chaco Canyon once. I was sick when I was there. I was running a fever. So I missed it. I didn't get it. I didn't understand what it was. I want to go where the Anasazi were. And there's a Native American gentleman who's befriended me, and he knows stuff, and he kind of leeches it out slowly to me. But he said, yeah, if we can travel, maybe in the late fall or something, you know, we could meet and check out the Anasazi. But all these places, Howard, are highly charged. They are highly charged. You know, look at Chichen Itza. Now, I've never been there, but I know enough about it. I was supposed to go on the in 2012.
Where is that, by the way?
Pardon me?
Where is that?
In Mexico, at the Yucatan Peninsula.
Right.
And I was supposed to go there, and at the last minute, we canceled, which is a three-hour conversation. But Chichen Itza has upwards of 50,000 people who were ritualistically slaughtered. And that's why these places are charged. The life is in the blood. Why human sacrifice? And what we've discovered going back to America Stonehenge, America Stonehenge had a sacrificial table. And we believe that there was human sacrifice that was done on it. So it's everywhere, absolutely everywhere we go. There's a site I could take you to in Minnesota, which we're not allowed to dig at, but it was accidentally dug open. And a very large guy was there. Now, they only saw him from the knees down, but at his feet were two ritualistically sacrificed virgins, probably 12 or 13 years old, lay at his feet. It was a giant. And there's a cemetery of these giants in this one area, but it's controlled by a Native American tribe. They won't let us dig there. Even though I've met the chief and the medicine man and protocoled them and said, we don't want to take anything. We just want to show that the First Nation oral tradition is the correct one, that there were giants that roamed the earth, and they were all around that area. And here's proof.
So you think there's an awful lot still to discover and still to learn. Now, you did a series about UFOs and aliens. How does that fit into any of this?
Well, it does. It does very much so. We keep bringing the viewer in our films and in my books back to the same question. Who is the Prince of the Power of the Air? Who is that? Who is that entity known as the Prince of the Power of the Air? Why is it that there are serpent cults all over the planet? Why is it that the serpent is always extolled, always raised up? Why is it that we see serpent iconography everywhere? Why is it that we hear about giants, the Tomb of the Giants in Malta, or Gilgal Raphaim, the Wheel of the Giants in Israel, and on and on and on it goes. So it's basically global. It's basically global, and that's why we're on the trail. I mean, that's why we do what we do.
But I think, and sadly I haven't seen it, and I must, one of your UFO programs was about physical remains of crashed objects, whatever they may be. I'm struggling to get the tie-in.
Here's part of a tie-in, okay? And I actually lectured on this on my daily show last week. When we were down in Peru, And hats off to our colleague, Brian Forrester. And it was Brian's video, which I saw, which led us to Peru to look at the enigmatic skulls. And I believe that these were not human. They were not the result of cranial deformation, cradle headboarding. They were genetic. That they were Nephilim skulls. That's what we believed. That was our hypothesis. That was our premise.
Because so, we have to say to our listener who's probably catching up with this, but, you know, the skulls I've looked at before and talked to a number of people before, and there are those who say there was a kind of deformation done because it was a sort of, I mean, it sounds awful. Of course it was. Fashionable thing to do. You're saying not so. This is a genetic thing we're seeing.
And, you know, Howard, if you shoot me your email when we're done, I may have it, but if you shoot me your email, I'll send you, you can watch episode 6, DNA, the final results. You can see it for yourself. We've got anthropologists, archaeologists, a team of doctors, surgeons, everybody looking at these skulls and examining them every which way to Sunday. And they all say the same thing. We're looking at a different species. We're looking at something that's genetic. You can't do this. And I'll send you the link. You can watch it at your leisure. And we can talk about that. You'll want to have me back because that's a whole program in itself. But when we were back there, the second time, maybe the first or second time, we were able to take one of the red hairs from one of the mummy skulls. We just took the hair. We put it in the bag, and we kept it. And we sent it off to Stephen Colburn, who's a scientist in America here, outside of Los Angeles. And so we knew about the fact that this skull from the red hair was about 2,000 years old. We knew that. So fast forward to Stephen, who has this gentleman that comes in who was raped by two hybrids with blondish white hair. When I say hybrids, they popped into his room. This is the whole UFO abduction phenomenon, okay? He's paralyzed. He can't move. They're hybrid entities. They've got this platinum blonde, whitish hair. He wakes up in the morning. He looks down at his chest, and he sees these two whitish hairs. He's got the presence of mind to take the white hairs, put them in a plastic bag. He gives them to Steve Colburn. Stephen Colburn, a scientist, he has access to Raman spectroscopy. So he takes the hairs from Peru, takes the hair from, this is all in my book, by the way, On the Trail of a Nephilim, Volume 2. So he takes the hair from Peru, takes the hair from this man who allegedly was raped by these two female hybrid entities. And then he has a control sample, and then he's got a dyed human hair as another sample, puts them all through Raman spectroscopy, and the graph comes out. So the human hair has a nice little slope. It just kind of goes up and then it goes down. The dyed human hair starts off in the bottom left and just goes right up through the roof at almost a 45 degree angle and off the grid. This is where it gets interesting, okay? The 2,000-year-old mummy skull hair and the two hairs from these hybrid females, the graft, they come off at the same place, right? And all the undulations of their slopes are almost identical, almost identical. And I asked, when I saw that, we all fell out of our chairs, and I said, Stephen, you need to write this down. And he did, and that's in the book. Basically, the bottom line is, there is a genetic similarity between these two hairs. So what we're looking at, if I'm right, and when you watch episode 6, these are, in my opinion, these are not human elongated skulls. There's something else. They're genetic. And there seems to be a tie genetically with these modern day hybrid entities, which are popping in and out. There's your tie-in with the whole UFO phenomenon.
So,
as well as,
if all of that's to be believed, then there is something truly ancient that ties back to everything that we've discussed.
Absolutely.
That's still part of our reality, but in the shadows.
Always in the shadows. Always in the shadows. But occultists know exactly who they are and what they are and who it is they worship. That's why there's a coven of witches that show up at the Serpent Mount. That's why Hunbat's men goes to the Serpent Mount. That's why Hunbat's men, as a shaman, can feel before he even knows about the rock with the serpent at Karnak. That's why, because they're tied in. They're tied in the serpent energy.
Do you think we have anything to fear from this power?
Yeah, I call it the coming great deception. It will change everything on the planet and do it almost instantaneously when they show up. When they show up, and, you know, people, you have to understand that we're on the sixth, almost the seventh rung of the UFO disclosure ladder. The first rung was Commander David Fravor, 2017, on Tucker Carlson's show here in the States. And he shows at the same time he's on a tic-tac-shaped UFO, which was filmed by infrared camera on his F-18. So all this is like top secret stuff, but now it's being revealed on primetime television on Tucker Carlson. And Carlson says to David Fravor, hey, in your opinion, what do you think this was? Commander Fravor goes, whatever this was not of this world. Now, David Fravor is an unknown. He doesn't have a book, a DVD. Nobody knows him, which begs the question, who calls up Tucker's producer and gets him on in 2017? Why? This is the beginning of disclosure. That's the first rung on the disclosure ladder. Several weeks later, they got Luis Elizondo on the show. Tucker asked him, are you saying that the United States has in its possession metal from crashed UFOs? Elizondo looks right at the camera and says, yes. Episode 3, the third rung on the disclosure ladder. He's got a guy called Chris Mellon, former CIA director, not director, but him as CIA, does all this stuff. And they ask him, well, did you guys examine the metal? And Mellon goes, yeah, we did. We found isotopes in this metal from allegedly crashed UFOs, which are not found on this Earth. Level 4, rung number 4 on the disclosure ladder, is the Pentagon basically stating that UAPs, unidentified aerial phenomenon, is real. Level 5, which is an absolute mind blower, is the government says we now have in our possession vehicles not made on this Earth, off-world vehicles. Nobody bats an eyelash, Howard. Number 6 is Commander David Fravor comes back on Tucker Carlson and states on the record that when he approached the tic-tac-shaped UFO, it jammed his radar. That is an act of war. That is an act of war. And number 7
maybe it was an act of something superior neutralizing our primitive technology.
Yeah, you can couch it that way. Okay. But from Fravor's viewpoint and a militaristic viewpoint, that's an act of war. So whatever's going on, the phenomenon is real, burgeoning, and not going away. And so the entire planet is now being prepped for this. Most people won't even look at it, but we're on number 7 of the disclosure ladder. Number 8 will more than likely be, in my opinion, and this is total conjecture, they will show the wreckage from Roswell or another craft. They will show the bodies. So they're going to have real video to see if people do anything. And eventually, they'll show up. And when they show up, Howard, this is what they will say, that we created all life on this planet. We genetically manipulated early man. We started the world's civilizations. We jump-started the world's religions. And now, at this critical juncture in human history, we, ET, is back to usher mankind into a golden age. They will give us two things, the free energy that pilots the ships, and they will give us a little chip that will extend our lifespan 300 to 500 years disease-free.
Well, you know, if that's going to happen, they need to hurry up. That's my personal view, because we have a saying here in the UK, you may well have it in the US. When I look at the world sometimes, in my darker moments, it looks like it's going to hell in a handcart.
I agree.
I don't know if you say that there, but we say that here.
We do.
Boy,
we do.
We've been on a journey, LA, and this is only the primer, so we'll talk again. So, yeah, very quickly, how's your 2021 shaping up then? You said that it's hard to get about the place, but you've got some plans. What are you going to be doing?
Yeah, briefly, we've got 2 conferences in March, so it's the first 2 conferences we've had since January of 2020, so we're very, cautious about that. We will drive to one, fly to the other. But as far as international travel, don't know yet. Don't know yet.
Okay. What's your website so that people can, because you've got a ton of material out there. I don't think we can list it all now. So the best thing to do, I think, is to go to your website.
Thank you.
Is it lamarzulli.net? Is that it? Is
correct.
That yours?
Yes, lamarzulli.net. You can stream all 6 of the On the Trail of a Nephilim series, especially that DNA one, by going to streaming.lamarzulli.net. There's so much material there, lots of years of research, and we're out in the field. And Howard, send me your email, please, and I'll send you that private link to the show.
I'm going to make that happen. Good to speak, L.A. Please take care of yourself, and we'll talk again. Thank you.
You got it. Cheers. Take care.
As ever, your thoughts welcome on L.A. Marzulli. More great guests on the pipeline here on The Unexplained. So until next we meet, my name is Howard Hughes. This has been The Unexplained Online. And please, whatever you do, stay safe in these weird times. Stay calm. And above all, please stay in touch. Thank you very much. Take care. Bye-bye.